Hello, everyone. It's Friday, the 21st of August, and welcome to episode 19 of the Kite Podcast 2020 with me, Will Evans.
And me, Ben Eagle. Today, we're talking all things organic and focusing on the organic market, because September is not just any month. It's Organic September. Find out more about this later. We'll be exploring how organic has been impacted by COVID and how it might be affected through a recession and, of course, Brexit. To do this, we're joined by two eminent guests, including Harriet O'Regan, who is Category Director for Milk and Organic at Arla, as well as Marketing Director at the Organic Trade Board, and Richard Hampton, Managing Director at OMSCO. And as always, we have everybody's favourite dairy market analyst on the show, Chris Wilkland.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Chris, let's start as usual with your weekly milk market update. We await with bated breath to find out where you are this week.
Well, I'm in the garden at number 18 Rooksbury Road, Andover, camping out and digging a hole. Ask me why.
Why, Chris?
Oh, don't sound so wearisome.
We're up to episode 19 now, Chris. It's getting that speed.
Well, I'm here because it's the headquarters of the Organic Trade Board, where lots of organic companies get together to do organic-y things like Organic September. And I'm camping out in readiness. First in the queue, just like the January sales. And I'm also digging a hole because that's what organic people do. They dig holes, which is why organic food is so wholesome. Get it? Oh. I mean, you go... Whenever I go on a conventional dairy farm, for instance, the first thing they say is, look at my marvellous view, or my cows, or my 100-100 parlour, whatever that is, or my big green tractor I can't afford. You go on an organic dairy farm, they just dig holes and show you worms. But I'm also amazed and alarmed because the member organisation of OTB, and there are lots of them, aren't there, Harriet? There are lots of them, look as if they are cooperating and working together for the common good. I can't believe that. They even have a plan. I mean, the conventional dairy sector has talked about cooperating and working together for 30 years, but it doesn't actually mean it. I've built my whole career, in fact, on the industry doing exactly the opposite of what it says it should be doing. But in organics, they seem to be actually doing it, pulling in the same direction. It's outrageous. There's no future for me in that, I'm afraid. But to the markets, have I got anything exciting for you this week? Don't I always? Do I have news to make your wildest cash flow fantasies come true? No. But there is some good news. Despite me predicting the butter price would fall in Europe for several weeks, it hasn't. It stayed the same yet again for seven whole weeks. So exactly what does that mean? Well, what it means is that the person who changes the numbers has been on holiday for seven whole weeks as well, because the butter price will have changed. But the good news, the really good news, is that there are signs of improvement, and even Polish butter has traded higher than the official Dutch listings this week. And cream's firming too. After weeks of being in the 140s, it's now crossed over the 150 threshold. And that might be perhaps because of the Eat Out to Help Out scheme, which I think a lot of people seem to be taking advantage of, although not me, because I don't have any friends. On powder, whole milk powder has stayed stable too. German origin skim milk has increased slightly. Dutch stayed the same. But unfortunately, French origin skimmed milk powder has dropped its pantalons on the Champs-Élysées this week. It's down 70 euros and has dragged the average price down yet again. In terms of your milk prices, they'll deliver below 26p. They were over 27. Spot prices are flat, still cheese is flat, although mozz is a bit firmer. Demand is apparently good for mozzarella still, even from vegans who haven't a clue what mozzarella is. And still there's some good news coming through on the futures. In Europe, land prices up for the second consecutive week and are now 3,500 euros for quarter four and quarter one. They haven't been there for a while. And skim milk powder futures are up too. We won't dampen the mood by looking at Southern Hemisphere futures there. Rubbish, and the GDT again was down, although in neutral territory. And the price on that platform equates to 25 pence and below, I'm afraid, so not good. So that's it from me. Little old mateless, friendless me. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going down the garden to eat worms. But what a good job it's organic week. There's plenty of them, and I'm not going to go hungry. Goodbye.
Chris, I have one question. Do you do children's parties? Magnificent.
Oh, thank you for that, Chris. Harriet, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Stranger
I'm not
than
sure
world.
I can follow that.
That's what everyone says. Yeah, it's far worse for us, honestly. We're going to start by staying true to 2020 and talking about COVID, because that's all we talk about now. What impact has COVID and the lockdown had on the organic milk market in the UK? What do you think have been the challenges and the opportunities that it's brought with it?
Yes, of course. So, yeah, it's been obviously a tough time. I think unlike the overall organic sector, which has fared pretty well through COVID, organic milk's had a tougher time, if I'm being honest. Couple of factors around that. Obviously, food service shut down. We've got some big customers in food service, and that's obviously meant demand's fallen off quite significantly. And we've also suffered as a result of the range rationalisation that had to happen to just keep up with the retail demand, which was obviously at an all-time high. And if you're sad like me and know how people shop milk, one of the things that people do is they're very loyal to their bottle size. So the fact that we couldn't offer small bottles, 1 pint, 2 pints, etc., meant that rather than somebody getting a different bottle size, they would actually trade into, you know, a different type of milk and move potentially away from organic into conventional. So that's affected the market. It's affected the value in the market, particularly. And good news is we're recovering from that. It's looking better. Last data shows that we're back into growth, certainly in volume terms, and that's accelerating in the last 4 weeks as well. So it is better, but it is still tough. It's tough out there. The retailers are challenging us from a range perspective and making sure that every listing and SKU count. So you know, it's been a tough time, but I think it's at least we're over the first roller coaster hump and things are looking up.
Going further afield, Richard, how have international sales held up, perhaps especially to the US, and what does the situation look like now?
Yeah, I think most countries from a consumer perspective have seen probably a pretty similar trend. In the US, for example, which is getting on for 50% of the world's organic demand. Of all products, similar kind of situations, consumers running to what they perceive to be safe havens in situations such as this, in terms of product ranges that offer slightly more. We've got a situation where we saw lots of panic buying. We were seeing big call-offs on our cheese in the US marketplace, believe it or not, during the early days, followed by an extended run rates, so much stronger sales of products that are used as cooking ingredients, so cheese in particular, potted creams, which obviously we don't do out there, but we can see it in the data as well as butters, and that's very similar to what's happened in the UK market. Interestingly, what they call fluid milk in the US, so our liquid milk market, has remained very, very strong organically out there, in a way that it hasn't really in the UK. So in the UK, I'm sure Harriet will back this up, run rates are pretty much back to normal, as they are in the conventional market as well. There are some signs of some stronger run rates on premium products, but generally that's kind of back to normal, and that's the sort of the scratch cook effect coming through. I guess the one area where we've noticed the impact abroad, perhaps more importantly than ever, and I think this is just as important in the UK, is the enormous growth in online retail does tend to favour products that struggle to gain space generally on the shelf. And as a result of that, there are some quite strong numbers coming through in areas such as online cheese sales, because they're getting the virtual shelf space in a way that they're not getting the real shelf space, as we'd see over here.
Moving away from COVID, there are plenty of other challenges on the horizon, especially with Brexit D-Day drawing ever closer and the prospect of recession, of course. Let's focus on Brexit for now, though. Richard, what are your thoughts on the prospects for organics as we move closer towards proper Brexit Day and the other side of it?
There are two big factors. The first is the tariffs, will there, won't there? That has an impact. The impact is perhaps less than most people think, because it's a reasonable assumption to assume that we will see quite a big change in the value of the pound should the worst happen, or the worst in terms of a trading perspective anyway, which I think will negate a great deal of the implications of tariffs themselves. The far bigger issue is the non-tariff barriers, and particularly the issue of equivalence. So UK-EU equivalence is fundamental. And if that is not in place, for whatever reason, that is going to lead to some enormous problems for exporters, for obvious reasons, but also for importers as well.
There's also, the issue of supply and demand here. And given that the immense number of challenges, that if we had a crystal ball, it would be great to know where we are heading, but no one really knows. Are you at all concerned, Richard, about balancing supply and demand specifically? And what are your predictions for how this might be impacted?
what do I think will happen in Brexit? Well, I mean, look, there's three. We work on sort of three versions of Brexit. There's soft, hard, and hardest. You know, and the soft Brexit is the obvious effective free trade agreement, or something that does some kind of deal where individual sectors will be able to trade freely. And agriculture must be right up there on one of the list of big sectors with huge tariffs where they might seek to do some kind of specific arrangement along with things like cars and pharmaceuticals, where there's some real challenges if you don't have equivalents or you don't have a solution to the question of the financial tariffs themselves. A hard Brexit, and this is what I would suggest is likely to be the one that we will get a version of, is the, you know, we have equivalents, but tariffs will be in place. And that's got some big implications for imports in terms of the cost of those raw materials, because much of what we import organically is clearly not able to be grown in the UK. And that's got sort of inflationary implications attached. But it also means problems exporting. And dairy is, we're an enormous net importer of dairy products in the UK, but we're actually a net exporter of organic dairy products. And so that means the value of those exports becomes challenged, and that could well weaken the UK market, but it just, it depends entirely on what version we get. I mean, the disaster scenario for the sector is the hardest version of Brexit, which is no equivalence at all, and effectively UK organic product cannot be sold in Europe at that point. For us, for example, that's not so much of an issue. We don't actually sell an enormous amount of product in Europe. It's access to the specialised processing in Europe that is our biggest concern in that area. So there are products that we make and we sell very successfully, and where we balance very successfully into Europe. For manufacturing, that infrastructure just is not available in the UK. So our whey stream, for example, cream into specialised butterfat products, that kind of thing is where the risk lies. But look, I mean, we all hope we don't get there, but we have to plan as if we will, to a greater or lesser extent. Mm.
Harrier, is organic in a good place right now in terms of the market and consumer understanding and consumer loyalty? And where do you think organic sits in terms of consumer mindset?
Yeah, and the answer is yes. If you look at the annual reports that the Soil Association release, you can see we're in sort of a really solid period of last decade, really, of seeing consistent growth year on year. And I got into organic about 4 years ago and remember thinking, well, £2 billion, that's it. We'll get there one day. And we're way past it already. We're at almost £2.5 billion in terms of the category. So it's really, you know, it's a steady, reliable growth that we're seeing, which points to things changing for the consumer rather than it just being, you know, certain factors that are affecting it. I do get asked a lot, what do we think is going to happen moving into a recession? You know, we saw in 2008 a little bit of a drop for the organic category. So will that happen again? But what I think's really important is to recognize that we're in a very different place back there. Organic was the new kid on the block. It was the new thing, a bit like veganism is now, you could argue. So it was probably a bit more fragile, customers quickly ranging a lot of organic products. And then suddenly when the consumer, you know, the world changed a bit, that's not the new thing. And that's not being talked about all the time. And actually what drove the decline before was retailers taking range out a lot of the time. So I think we're in a very different place now. We have a much more loyal basis for a consumer loyalty, that people are buying regularly organic products. They expect their retailers to stock them. We've got almost 85% of the population buying organic on an annual basis. So, you don't realize how many people actually buy into it. It's much, much more mainstream. And you've got a very different consumer mindset as well. You know, I'm amazed to see the shift in consumer attitudes towards sustainability and how it really is part of every shop now. And it really matters to not just the green elite or the small niche of people who like to dig holes, as Chris said, but actually the wider, you know, more mainstream shopper who is seeing all this, you know, doom and gloom of what's happening with the climate and the crisis that we're in, and actually wants to do something about it. So organic offers that you know, a choice. It's not the only choice, but it's one of those choices. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things to be positive about, and it is a really good it's a sector to back. That said, we are obviously heading into a tough time. Our retailers are challenging us in terms of range very heavily. We don't know what will happen with consumer confidence in terms of obviously price and household income could become a big issue. And I think that still will mean that the category as a premium price category it'll be tough. But I think from a consumer sentiment point of view, we've got to feel very positive about the opportunity for the organic sector.
You mentioned plant-based products just there. Where do you think organic sits specifically against that within a recessionary context?
Yeah, I mean, we still see the growth of the plant-based sector. It's still very much something that consumers are considering and thinking about, and that's driven by health, sometimes misguided, but health credentials and also sustainability. And I think we expect to continue to see that. That's not going away. And organic does offer an option within dairy for people that are looking for those things. So hence why I think it's important. But I think our retailers are recognizing that as well. It's a similar type of shopper. But having said that, I think, you know, we do see a lot of ex-vegans coming back. It's hard, you know, dairy is really hard to give up. People love it, and it's an important part of our diet. So, you know, for those people who want, you know, to meet demands in terms of sustainability or health benefits, they're it's another offering for them. And hopefully it will help give them confidence, you know, that dairy is a sustainable choice.
Harriet, can I just ask you a question? From a farming point of view, I live in a dairy farming area here, and I've got an organic dairy farmer who's very good farmer, one of the best farms in the area. And traditionally, that sort of conventional organic farmer is kind of like a them and us thing. But over the last few years, farmers have got more interested in nature-friendly farming, regenerative ag, the environment generally. Do you think that distance has closed? And from a farming point of view, kind of people are more interested in organic farming and trying to learn aspects of it, do you think?
What a great question. Yeah, I absolutely do. And I think that's partly why organic is becoming a lot more talked about, because it isn't about in any way saying one is better than the other. It's about acknowledging that, you know, farming as a whole needs to recognize, you know, its huge amounts of responsibility, you know, with 70% of the land in our country being farmed. You know, that is so important for our biodiversity, our land, our soil health, and that's for every farmer to take on board. And I think yes, absolutely, we are recognizing, I think, as a total industry, that the importance of that, and hence why we can all have the same conversation and all be working in the same direction. And that's important for organic as well. It's important that organic farmers step up and continue to improve and continue to do more and learn more. And I see some amazing stuff that farmers are doing to really, you know, as you say, think about things like regenerative agriculture and where the future lies and how we can just, you know, continually improve. So I think it's a journey. I think it's a journey we're all on. And I think in doing so, we can actually work more together than we've ever done before, which I think is really, really positive.
Putting your organic trade board hat on, can you tell us about Organic September and what that's all about? Because you're focusing on biodiversity and sustainability. Becky and I, by the way, thought that it would be much better to have Organic October, simply for alliteration reasons. But
sorry, we're still with September. And Chris did a great lead in here in terms of he's right. We're working together as a sector, as an industry, much more than we ever have before. And I'm super pleased to be part of that and part of leading that. And ultimately, what our aim is at the moment is to help to amplify the Organic September event that the Soil Association have successfully run for a number of years. So we're sticking with that because it's already a really positive event that is in the calendar, that is recognised. But we just want to amplify it. We want to make more of it. And there's loads of stuff going on. It's going to be noisy in September for organic. Hopefully you'll see it everywhere. That's the idea. So we've got a lot going on. We're doing a lot of PR, really trying to sort of myth bust around organic, and also give people, you know, just people feel a bit bombarded and they don't know how they, as this one individual, can make a big difference. But the idea is to give them lots of small tips and small things that they can do every day, of which organic is one of them, to help them make a difference. So hopefully that will get some great coverage. We're looking at using the power of social media to get people to swap one thing. Again, just one small swap. You can't be 100% organic. Even if you try, it's impossible because they're just not, it's not available everywhere. But we want people to think, actually, could you make one more swap? Could you do something a little bit more sustainable in your choices, in your shop? And could you share that and get a bit of a movement going online? So we're hoping to get some great reach with that campaign. We've got a new website, goorganicuk.com, which will link into all of the work that the Soil Association are doing as well. And we're also working with retailers a lot to help them learn from what goes on in Europe, actually, because some of our European market colleagues there, you know, they're looking at 30% of their milk category being organic. So we've got a few things to learn from those guys. So there's a lot that we can share with retailers in the UK to help them know how they want to win in organic. And I have to say that I speak to retailers a lot most days, talking and working on how we can help them drive organic. And I've not ever seen the support that you know, and the desire to drive it than I have at the moment. So I think it's a really positive place to be, and I'm super excited about how we can help throughout September make that happen.
And what would success mean for you for Organic September?
So ultimately, one of the key measures that we look at is noise, and we measure that in terms of conversation online. And we can interesting to see this sort of ongoing, sort of steady drumbeat of voice of organic. Really interesting, actually, to see that veganism took a massive peak and has hugely dropped, actually, recently. So it just sort of suggests that there's that sort of, you know, bust around the conversation, perhaps. But organic, on the other hand, is actually starting to really step up, and more people talking about it becoming a more mainstream conversation. So that's what we want to push. We want to see that go up even further. And we want to drive reach with our campaign. So we're hoping to reach 3 million people with our campaign and really get out there and talk about it, and just organic just be more part of the conversation. But I also think it's important to think about it as part of a sustainability initiative as well. And for me personally, it's also about saying every individual that gets involved in this, can we encourage people to just think about their lives and what they could make one small swap in, may that organic, be that something else, but you know, how could people just make a bit of a difference? And if we all did that, we could make a huge difference overall.
That's all we have time for today. But a big thank you to our guests today, Harriet O'Regan and Richard Hampton. And of course, also to Chris Campino in his garden.
Oh, my garden, OTB's garden.
We call that squatting in Yorkshire.
Thanks very much also to you for listening. Please do get in touch with us on Twitter at Kite Consulting if you have any views on the show today, or if there's something that you'd like us to discuss in a future episode. Will, Chris and I will be back next week, and we'll see you then.